This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all Have Another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, HRRN Nation, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. That's right. It is Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna with you once again in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, extending a special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and for those of you tuning in on our website, on your smartphone, or your tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net, we welcome you to the program here as well. You know, one of the truly awesome things about this show is that every week we get to go on a journey together and we get to visit with and learn about those trainers in our sport that aren't necessarily the household names of a Bob Baffert or a Todd Pletcher or Bill Mott or Steve Asmussen. But if you've learned anything from listening to these trainer talk shows over the course of the past couple of years, you know that every trainer has a unique story. And every trainer had to dedicate himself or herself fully to this profession in order to be successful on any level. It's a prerequisite. It's a prerequisite because this is a 24/7, 365-day-a-year job. And I tell you that each and every week. And tonight's guests are no exception to that rule. And although she's been around horses her entire life, trainer Jenna Antonucci is just getting started with her training career when it comes to working with thoroughbreds. She has saddled 49 winners to date, with roughly one-third of all her starters finishing in the money. And she is with us now on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Jenna, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. Happy to have you on board and looking forward to hearing your story. And I mentioned that you're kind of just getting started, and I mean that with the utmost respect. You haven't been training thoroughbreds long, but you've been around horses your entire life.
Yes. No, it's a public profession versus the building it and they will come, you know, journey that I think we all take in this. So, you know, professionally, as far as the racetrack, 2010 was our first public start and put all of our hard work and life's work out there.
And you go back, even going back to your childhood, you were around horses, not necessarily race horses, but you were around other disciplines ever since you were a little kid, weren't you?
Correct, yes. And I was that horse crazy little girl that my mother, I think it was reluctantly at first, and she got bit for a little bit. I was about 3 and a half actually, and started with all of the little pony stuff and hunters and jumpers growing up, and just never thought I'd do this for a career, to be very honest. I did things in the real world, from home building to other kinds of things, and just for various different reasons kept getting drawn back to the horses, and through a patient journey have found my way to the racetrack and love it.
When did you get your first horse?
Well, my business initially started actually with mares and weanlings and yearlings and foaling mares, and that was the start of the thoroughbred world for me. And actually, my first client was actually a standardbred broodmare, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
And so it just evolved from there, and just before that, I had broke babies and developed young horses and kind of did the journey through every aspect of the industry. I didn't want to just go to one spot saying, no, I'm going to go train horses and not entertain every part. I wanted to really respect and understand every part of the industry so that I could do the best possible job with whichever part really I felt suited me best. And so I patiently kind of went through all that. And I was very lucky to have the exposure in Ocala. I got to work at Padua when they were still breaking and training with Wayne Lucas's program and Todd Quast, who's now Goldmark, and great exposure and great organization and great management. And you learn so much from those programs by being in them and breeding them and living them. And that was the initial introduction to the thoroughbred world. And ironically, actually, I wanted to learn to do that so I could bring it back to the hunter-jumper world.
Really?
I had retrained so many thoroughbreds to be jumping horses or trail horses or whatever other discipline they were going to be when their racing career was over. And so I always received them. They were so backwards. I'm like, why are these horses, like, I'm pulling left and they want to go right. I'm putting leg on. They don't understand. What am I missing? And so that was my motivation to even go to the thoroughbreds so that I could do a better job in their next careers and speak to them in the language they understood and not try and cram it down their throat with what I needed them to hear.
Yeah, that's interesting. What's the primary differences between the hunter-jumper world and the thoroughbred world?
Besides speed, there isn't a whole lot of difference. You either have an athletic horse or you don't. It's placing them at the right level. You know, hunter-jumper world, if they're going to be super fancy and if they're going to be, you know, the big fancy show horse, and it's the same thing in this world. If it's going to be a claiming level horse, an allowance horse, or a stake horse, it's just trying to tap into each athlete and find out which level is going to be their level, whether they're jumping jumps, whether they're going around a dressage ring, or they're going around a racetrack.
Was it hard to leave that discipline behind and segue into the thoroughbreds?
Through my journey, no, just in the sense of, because I had actually still showed a little bit, and I had, I kind of did it gradually, where I was able to, I was doing the mares, and I had my hands on doing things, but I was still able to feed the competitive side of my personality. And so through that transition, no. And then once I fully jumped into this, it's been fantastic. You have to be a little nutty to want to do this full time.
I mentioned that in the beginning of the show. This is not a profession to be taken lightly because there are no vacations. There are no days off. You're there on holidays. You're there on weekends. And it's just the nature of the beast, isn't it?
It is. And it's so multi-leveled, and Every trainer has the things that are important to them and their journey. And, you know, we on the backside have to balance our business and the front side has to balance their business. And you have to find that cohesiveness, and it's a bigger picture. You know, we've got staff to manage, and if, you know, you're helping with visa programs so that you have your staff being consistent. And it's a very, very layered job and industry and career.
Talking with trainer Jenna Antonucci here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jenna, let's go back just a little bit. I want to go back to something you said when you were talking about your mom and how she eventually got bitten a little bit by this equine bug. What was her reaction when you told her, hey, this is what I want to do for a living?
Why? There are so many people that have been around my life that for them it was so clear. And I think for my parents it was clear, and for people that, you know, watched my life, it was clear that, well, yeah, of course you were going to do the horses. And it wasn't that clear for me. But I think that's important too, to create balance and to be able to further educate yourself and learn about everything so that you're a better balanced individual to do a better balanced job.
I read something on your bio where you talked about one of the things that drove you when you first got involved with thoroughbreds, and one of the reasons you did it, was because you were retraining so many of them for their second careers, and you saw that they were just so badly broke, and you wanted to obviously help them as best you could and do it a little bit differently maybe than some trainers would. Is that right?
Very much so. And everyone loves to label. And that's not just in the thoroughbreds, it's in society in general. And that's probably the most common question. Well, who were you an assistant for? And who did you this? And who did you that? And it makes people think a little bit uncomfortable that if you want to come at things from a fresh approach and from a different approach, even if it's from nutrition or how you want to balance a horse and how you want to give a horse a different experience here. And my philosophy has always been, my job is to mimic Mother Nature as closely as I can, and to, you know, this is a stressful situation for a horse. It's not normal for them to live in a stall. It's not normal. It's not what they're bred to be and bred to do. And so we really try and make that a focus and always have of mimicking Mother Nature as much as we can in this environment so that we can get the most out of them, listening to their personalities and trying to tap into what makes each one of them tick.
You mentioned being involved with that Padua program and, of course, the D'Wayne Lucas connection there. Yearlings are something that you really are fond of, yearling thoroughbreds. You love working with them. You love being around them. And that's one of the things that drives you, isn't it?
I love watching a horse develop. And that's seeing what makes them tick and what works and what doesn't work. And it's actually been an enjoyment that I didn't expect to have, and one that we claim are ones that come to us from a different program, and watching them learn and evolve. And it's really cool. I mean, I know that sounds a little hokey, but it is. It's so gratifying to watch a horse become successful in their own merit once you have figured out what makes them tick, whether they're younger or older.
Yeah, and every horse is different, right?
Completely. And that's, you hear that all the time where people, oh, they're all the same. I'm like, no, they're, you know, this one can be a little snarky, that one can be a little sassy, and this one's a little bullish, and this one's a little shy, this one's a little bit more too confident, you know, and that's, you know, you walk in the barn and it's a face full of all these different personalities every day.
Give me your favorite story, maybe a favorite yearling that you've been around that you've really done some good work with, and you knew that because you treated that yearling like an individual, they were able to flourish.
I'm probably not going to give you a yearling, but I will give you an older horse, and that it would actually be Five Star Mama, which obviously we've had our most success with. Just, she was just a filly or a mare rather that just wasn't being completely heard. And, you know, we all train basically the same. I mean, I am anyone that says that we do it, oh, everyone does it so different. We all basically do the same thing on the racetrack. We all go in an oval. We all go backwards some days. We all go breeze. The general body of work of what most trainers do is pretty much in between the rails. I think everyone would probably agree with that. So it's really what we do in the barn, and watching her evolve and come out of her skin and show her little personality more, and then all of a sudden get that fight back in her to want to run and want to win and be competitive, is so gratifying. And, you know, we've had some very average individuals based on what most owners, you know, aspire to. That in New York, we've had a couple of just New York bred claiming horses that were homebred for some very nice people that have horses with us, that we've been able to tap into them and make them consistent and successful. And watching that for an owner is really cool to watch, where it's not a big, huge, expensive horse, but it's their homebred and we've made it successful. And to them, that's their success.
What's the key to doing that, Jenna?
Patience and listening. A horse will tell you their entire story. You just have to be willing to listen and slow down and listen to them. And that makes some people uncomfortable, for sure, where it sounds outside of the box a bit. And
yeah. Sounds like a horse whisperer.
I don't like to throw that around. They'll tell you everything, and they will. And it's just trying to hear them and make what we can for them the best situation. And it works sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't.
How do you, are you listening? And forgive me for my lack of knowledge on this, but are you listening when they're on the racetrack? Are you listening when they're in their stall, when they're hot walking? Where are you getting all your information?
Yes.
All of the above.
Yes. They tell you a lot in their stalls. And that's where I think trainers are really different, is what happens in the barn. The big focus for us is we have a very quiet barn. Energy is very important around horses, positive energy, happy people. If I see someone shanking or yelling or whatnot, they don't last with us, because it's just not necessary. A lot of it's in the barn, watching them train. You know, you'll watch a horse that's just been a little flat in the racetrack, and then all of a sudden you see them kind of pick their head up a little bit, and you'll watch them start clocking horses in front of them and trying to get to those horses where before they'd be content enough to just gallop behind them. And, you know, rider feedback and your team feedback is so important. You know, is this one eating as good as it has been? If they backed off, where are we missing? What is this horse telling us that we're not catching if we're not seeing it improve?
Yeah, so many trainers have come on this program, and I've heard several trainers say that if you just keep them happy, that goes a long way in getting that horse to perform at their best. Do you agree?
Yes, and it sounds so fundamental, but it is the truth. It's finding they're happy. I mean, they're not much different than us, really.
Jenna Antonucci here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Jenna, will you go to the yearling sales, like let's say a Phasic Tipton sale, to select yearlings yourself, or do you rely on other people to bring them to you?
It's been both. I do enjoy going. I think you can see a lot about a horse just by seeing them and being around them. The energy they give off, the kind of beings that they are, sometimes you lose some of that in translation because other people just see it differently. And so I'll be willing to take a chance on one that may be a little bit of later foal or looks like it's just a little behind or maybe didn't get prepped great for whatever reason. And so, you know, we may be able to get this horse at a bit of a more affordable price. Let's be a little patient with it and tap into what this is and send it to the right people to get broke and brought along, that they will allow this horse to come out of its shell and do the right things. And it's been successful that way.
What are some of the key attributes you're looking for in a young horse?
Honesty. And I know that's probably
really?
the only one that ever tells you that, but yes, honesty. I mean, you can watch a horse on a shank and just see where they are, and they'll tell you where they are. And there's something about watching how horses are handled and watching how they, even at a yearling sale, watching go back and forth. Just there's something about a good horse that you just know it's a good horse when you watch them on the shank. And some of those we can't afford, and some of them we can, but it's fun to watch the ones where you're like, that's going to be a special horse. And you watch them go on, you're like, I knew that was the right kind of horse.
Well, and so many times I'll hear the word communication used, not just with the horses, and you talk about getting a read from the horses and really listening to them. But I'll hear the term communication used with trainers talking with their owners and how important that communication is to being successful with your operation and with theirs. What do you tell new owners or even your current owners when they come to you and have this idea with some of their horses?
It really depends on each individual owner's, what their goals are and what they're looking to have out of this experience, and what their objectives are, because everyone has a different angle, right? So you have homebred owners that have a realistic expectation of we're probably going to be able to accomplish this, this, and this. And then you have some owners that if they want to claim and sell more aggressively, or if they want to, you know, buy one at the sale, maybe have it be super ready for a first time out and sell it off the racetrack, or others that want to watch horses develop and create horses that are going to be running 4, 5, and 6-year-old years. So really just trying to identify and understand what each individual owner is looking for and what they need to accomplish to make them feel that they have their level of success in this experience.
Sure. So it's not just the horses that are individuals, it's the owners and their goals, which you're looking at those individually as well.
You have to. And that's where it's letting owners tell you this is what their goals are and this is what their objectives are. I mean, this owners obviously are the life behind what we do and behind our success. And so if you aren't listening to what is important to them and what their goals are, and being able to be honest with them and saying, listen, I understand this is what you want to accomplish, but these individuals that we're working with isn't going to get us there. So how do you want to proceed from here to there? Do we need to try and get these horses moved on? Do we want to reassess where we're going with this? And just have, you know, sometimes a 5-minute awkward conversation leads to endless time of it being exactly what everyone's looking for.
Yeah, and unfortunately, those conversations are part of being a horse trainer. I know there's many times when you have to pick up that phone and you have to deliver news that you might not want to deliver, whether a horse has been injured, needs a little time off, or whatever the situation might be. How do you handle those situations, Jenna?
It's the hardest thing. I mean, part of who I am is I don't ever want to let anybody down, whether it's an owner or a horse, you know, my crew. And so it's just dealing with it head on. And saying, you know, I've been very blessed that we haven't had a ton of horrible bad news, and I attribute that to what we do, but it is, and it's inevitable, whether we don't run well or whether we do have an injury, and it's just picking up the phone or shooting an email, whoever, you know, whatever their communication preferences are, and just being straightforward. Listen, this is what we have. This is what we're dealing with. And here are our options. And how do we want to proceed?
Well, that that must make the good phone calls all that much more rewarding when you can deliver some positive news, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, as you know, you've talked with enough trainers and those long enough, you know, on the best of cases, we are 20% successful. So that means you're 80% of the time not having rosy, cheery news.
Yeah. How does a trainer persevere through an 80% losing rate? You mentioned 20% success rate in this game is pretty darn good. You're a good trainer if you can win 20% of the time, but yet you're losing 80% of the time. Is that difficult mentally?
It can be. And that's where I think it's paramount to find balance with finding success, because success isn't always crossing the finish wire first. And at the end of the day, unfortunately, there's a lot of very, very good trainers that do a very good job that don't fire at that big clip, whether it's they're not placing horses right or they don't have the right horses for where they're having to run or whatever the myriad of reasons is. But there are so many successes that we have every day, whether it's a horse training better or getting a great race out of a horse that you've been trying to figure out what's going on with this individual. And then all of a sudden you're like, we ran second today, but it was the best race this horse has ever ran. Yes, we're moving forward. And so, yeah, you're not going to have that 20% success that you're looking, or 10 or 15% based on how the industry views your success and how it wants to compartmentalize us.
How much time do you spend reading through the condition book?
That's a tough one to answer directly. What I like to do is when new books come out, you know, obviously you have kind of a plan in your head of and a path for each, and each individual horse has their own business plan. That's how they line up in my head. And so if we run, I space them out. And when our new condition books come out, then plot them. You know, New York's books are shorter. Florida's books are a little longer. Pennsylvania's, you know, they all have a different time period. So new books come out, just try and here's option A, here's option B, here's option C. And just try and plot out what makes sense for everybody. This horse ran well. We'd like to protect it next time a little bit. Let's look at this spot instead of this spot.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the fact that, you know, you're looking at condition books at different racetracks, New York, Florida, et cetera, because you do have horses all over the country. Talk about the challenges of having multiple stables at different tracks.
I'm very fortunate. I have a great team. My assistant in New York, Axel's newer with us, and she's just taken it all like it's her own, and great communication there. And then my assistant in Florida, Fiona's been with me from the very beginning. And it's the biggest challenge is when you can't stare at the horse 7 days a week, is knowing that the person that's working with you sees it similarly to that, the way that you do. And so if you know you have a goal for this horse, and hey, how's this horse doing? Everything is status quo. They're eating well. They're doing everything right. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, we're still on target. So the biggest challenge would just be knowing that who's working for you is seeing it how you see it when you're standing next to them.
You've talked about setting goals for your horses, setting goals for your owners, and doing that individually. You haven't talked about setting goals for yourself. Will you do that, Jenna?
I actually had this exact conversation, funny you bring that up, the other day, and I think it's a double-edged sword, and that was the exact conversation, because it goes without saying, all the trainers want to win the big greatest stake races, have an opportunity to do the Triple Crown, have opportunity for Breeders' Cup. I mean, that's without saying. So it's finding the balance, right? So how do you have quality and be able to try and attain those goals, but realize that 85% of your racing isn't done by the top stake horse and the top allowance horse. So my goal is obviously to always improve quality and to keep building horses towards more quality racing and higher level of racing, and still nurture the backbone of the industry, which is your claiming level horse. So personally, I have those big goals, and I intend to achieve them. We just haven't gotten there yet.
How many horses do you have in training now?
We have about 20 in Florida and about 14, 15 in New York.
Is that a good number, or would you like to have more?
A little bit more, just for a good cycle where you're consistently running, you get into a good rhythm. I'd love to be an even 25-25 split is what we've talked about. It gives your crew a good split. It allows you to have good rotation with your horses. Seasonally, you can move horses back and forth, and I think you'll find a nice balance.
Are you the only member of your family involved with racing?
I'm the only one afflicted, yes.
I love the way you put that.
My father's actually very allergic to hay and horses, but he's a good cheerleader, and my mom and my stepdad, my grandmother, they're very, very supportive and huge cheerleaders of what I do, and respect and appreciate the insanity of what this is.
Yeah, how often will they come out and watch your horses run?
My grandmother actually lives in New York, up in Saratoga, so through the meet there, we get her out a couple of three times throughout the meet. And my mother actually makes a big effort when they're down in Florida. She comes out and tries to come as much as she can to watch racing, and my stepdad will come out in the morning when he can. They enjoy it, for sure.
Do they ever call you for tips?
No, they know better.
Jenna Antonucci here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jenna, just a couple of minutes left. This has completely flown by. I always like to end by asking trainers to tell us something that people might not know about them. So when you're not at the racetrack, what other things or hobbies do you enjoy?
I guess it's not really a huge secret. I was actually a very avid golfer before I really fully invested into this. So
how good?
Although they're a little bit rusty right now, I do enjoy the golf course and just trying to find some quiet time away from this pace that we live and function at every single day. But I'm a huge sports fan and love all those sorts of things.
Yeah, how good of a golfer were you? Like LPGA Tour good?
I actually did Q school and I was about a 3 handicap. So yeah, we were thinking about the Futures Tour and such back then.
If you get a chance to play with Ian Wilkes, go ahead and make sure he brings his wallet. It's always a lot of fun to take his money.
He is. I actually have had the pleasure of playing with him, and it is a good time.
Jenna, look, really appreciate all the time. It's been a delight to hear your story, and always fun to catch up. I'll look forward to seeing you when I get down to Florida or even up in New York, but really do appreciate all the time. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, you receive a gift from one of our sponsors. It's Flair Equine Nasal Strips. So I'll get those sent out to you, and all the best moving forward.
Thanks so much. We'll talk soon.
All right. Jenna Antonucci here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. How about that? Got through Q school. It's pretty darn good. All right. Second half of Trainer Talk. It's coming up next. Stay with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The Fasig Tipton Florida Sale enters a new era on Wednesday, March 4th, when the two-year-old in training sale will be held for the first time at Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida. With 175 entries cataloged, buyers will find outstanding quality at a variety of price ranges. 2014 Fasig Tipton two-year-old sales graduates include grade one winners, Bayern.
Bayern, Toast of New York, Bayern has won it! Bayern got there by a head.
Competitive Edge.
Competitive Edge makes it two for two here at the Spa.
And Dortmund.
Firing line and Dortmund gonna hit it together. Dortmund's comeback.
As well as greatest stakes winning two-year-olds Blofeld and I Spent It. This year's Fasig Tipton Florida sale is an event not to be missed by any major buyer. The Under Tax Show is scheduled for Monday, March 2nd, beginning at 10 a.m., with the sale hosted on Wednesday, March 4th. Visit FasigTipton.com to download your catalog today.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
For racing coverage from the inside out, I still kicked away, and I thought I really had it until the 16th pole. Amazing little horse.
International English events.
A clear round and under the time limit will get you into the jump off.
And hard-fought Western competition.
Here we go, guys. Let's help him. You bet.
Woo! Tune in to HRTV, the network for horse sports. Online at HRTV.com.
Jude Fell, the pontiff of the Pick Four. You hear him on HRRN Radio. Now get his personal selections directly from him at his new site, PopeJude.com. Every analysis sheet at PopeJude.com has his personal selections and insights. Each page is a handicapping lesson packed with years of racing knowledge, coupled with insider information gleaned from the pontiff's countless connections in thoroughbred racing. Whether you're looking for another set of eyes on the past performances or inspired racing analysis to assault the windows, PopeJude.com is the site for you.
If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
Upstart, and it's a knockout of Gone by Frosted.
International star, shined again in New Orleans.
Shares Belief, handwritten by Mike Smith, wins with his ears pricked. Shares Belief beat California Chrome.
Holding off Lee as they come down to the finish. Constitution of the Dawn.
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. If you missed the Equine Forum, you missed a lot.
Hall of Famer Nick Zito here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And I think the horse of the year this year was rightfully so in California Chrome, because he had to go through a lot of stuff, and that's what these horses do on a Triple Crown trail. So when you get, as I call it, spring training, and when you get to a place, whether it's, you know, we're lucky enough to be in Florida, a lot of horses come from, you know, Arkansas or wherever they come from, other fairgrounds, Louisiana. They still have to do well in that, what we call spring training. You know, they have to do good. They have to get better. They have to get stronger. They have to feel that they're going to step up. And that's the whole key. But, of course, Mike, with all the stuff we're talking about, you got to have the horse.
The Equine Forum, giving you the inside track on thoroughbred racing. Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 a.m. on Sirius XM Channel 92 and always streaming live at horseracingradio.net. The Gotham Stakes. Gotham Stakes.
Hansen to take the 2012 Gotham Stakes.
By Jack, drawing away now in deep stretch. It's Samrat narrowly, and Samrat will stay undefeated.
The Gotham Stakes, Saturday, March 7th, exclusively on HRRN. Presented by Sunrise Stallions. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information or to listen live.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And welcome back to the show trainers listen to. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Welcoming everybody back that's tuning in throughout North America, Sirius 220, XM 206, and everybody joining us with our live streaming on our website, on your smartphone, your tablet, however you may be listening worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Fun visit with Jenna Antonucci in the first half of the program, and really looking forward to the second half here as well, as I'm going to talk with Carl Broberg and an interesting story. I told you at the beginning of the show, every trainer has a very unique story as to how they got involved with thoroughbred racing. Well, I think you're really going to enjoy hearing Carl's story in just a moment. Before I do get to that, though, I want to remind you that the Fasic Tipton Florida sale is coming up next week. That's right. It takes place on Wednesday, March 4th. The preview day is on Monday, March 2nd. I, of course, will be heading down to be at the Fasic Tipton sale. Can't wait to get there. And an exciting announcement coming out earlier today. Gulfstream Park and Fasic Tipton have announced a $1 million bonus for a horse that wins the 2016 Florida Derby if that horse is a graduate of this year's two-year-old sale at Gulfstream Park, that Fasic Tipton two-year-old sale. Pretty cool. So you get $1 million if you purchase a horse this year. He goes on and wins the Florida Derby next year. Horses withdrawn or scratched from the sale will not be eligible for the bonus. And in the unlikely event of a dead heat in next year's Florida Derby, that bonus will be divided equally between the two horses, assuming that they're both graduates of this upcoming Fasic Tipton Florida sale. So make plans now to be down there at Gulfstream Park. It's going to be an amazing event, and that bonus certainly adds to the intrigue. Carl Broberg has trained 1,274 winners to date. His runners are fast approaching $19 million in total purse earnings, and he's accomplished all of these lofty numbers in just 6 short years of training racehorses. It's an amazing story. And yes, he is Carl Broberg, and he joins us right now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Carl, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Happy to be a part of it.
What do you think? You want to take a shot at that $1 million bonus next year and win the Florida Derby?
I better stick to the $5,000 claimers that I'm accustomed to.
It would be nice, but you're right. You've done very, very well. I mentioned those numbers, and Carl, I have to tell you, those are ultra impressive considering the fact that you didn't start training horses like most people did at a very young age, and you weren't necessarily around the game in that aspect at a very young age. Take me back to the beginning and tell me about the story of Carl Broberg.
I'm a lifelong fan of the sport. I had several goes at trying to make my way through it solely on the gambling side. I love playing the horses. I did it from day one. I started at Arlington. My dad would pull me out of school all the time. I'd go play him up there at Arlington Park. Then we relocated to Oklahoma right as they became paramutual. And I was in love with it. I mean, that's all I did, and I did all right with it, but it's hard to support a family just wagering on horses. But it was clearly all I wanted to do. So there were a couple points in my life where I had the opportunity to be a groom. And I did that and quickly realized that there was no way I was going to support a family doing that. So as much as I loved it, I had to give it up. Started a small advertising company that was doing all right for me. And as soon as I had the resources to claim a couple of cheap horses, I did it with a trainer by the name of John Locke.
Okay.
And we had limited success on a small scale. But I still absolutely loved it, and things started to improve for us, at which point he began talking about retirement. And from the time I claimed the first horse with him, he wound up getting a free laborer out of it, too. I mean, I was actually probably a horrible owner because I, from 5 a.m. till 11 a.m. every day, I never left the barn. I loved it. It's all I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So he tolerated me, and then when he started talking about retirement, I just made a play to buy the equipment he had, and I talked to the team that he had in place, and we actually never missed a beat.
Well, I want to go back to something you mentioned when you first started telling your story, and you talked about your dad who would actually pull you out of school to take you to Arlington to bet the horses. You must have had the coolest dad in the world if he's taking you to the track and letting you miss school.
I really did. I can't recall the number of supposed doctor visits I had when I was actually out there playing Arlington Park.
Now, your dad was obviously a huge horse racing fan as well.
Yes, he was, and still is to this day. $2 better, but he just loves the sport and follows it religiously.
How often does he come out and watch your horses run? Does he get that chance very much?
He's actually retired to Missouri, so now he just follows it on the computer.
All right. I always like to ask trainers when they talk about their parents being involved and supporting them in that way, do they call you for tips and say, hey, come on, son, give me a little something?
He really doesn't. He understands that I live on my phone and is very respectful of that and just follows and cheers him on.
So it sounds to me, from listening to you tell your story, that you never, even when you were doing those other things and you had your advertising agency, you never, ever wanted to do anything other than horse racing.
No. No, in fact, it was so bad when we started that little company out of our house. And then when we finally decided it was time to get an office, the first thing I did was make sure that it was within 5 minutes of Lone Star Park.
Wow. Wow. How about that first time that you, yeah, I know you mentioned claiming the horses and working with your friend, and then when he got ready to retire, you kind of took over. But how about that first time that you watched your horse bound under the wire first? What was that moment like?
It wasn't as exhilarating as you would think. More than anything, it was a relief because I realized the importance of us. It was imperative that we had success early.
Mm-hmm.
Or the operation just wasn't going to work. I knew that if we didn't come out of the gates firing right away, that it would be hard to keep the little bit of business that we had, much less grow it.
Yeah, there has to be a very special sense of accomplishment, though, with everything that you persevered through, and to keep sight of that goal of getting involved and being a horse trainer like you wanted to your whole life. When you finally get to that pinnacle and you start having horses start winning for you, that has to be an amazing sense of accomplishment, isn't it?
You would think so.
Yeah.
But every time we continue to achieve the goals that we want, and we just keep setting the bar higher and higher, and you really just don't even allow yourself time to think about it. I know how boring that sounds and generic, but that's the reality of the situation. I mean, you just keep trying to shoot for more.
Talking with trainer Carl Broberg here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Carl, you and I are similar in a way because I cut my teeth on racing at Saratoga and became a fan of the sport just as a fan. Betting on horses, I became hooked on it and eventually made a career and a living out of this great game. And I know that there were certain trainers that I followed religiously when I was betting horses, and certain trainers that I would look up to when I was just a fan. How about yourself, especially as somebody who wanted to be a horse trainer? Were there trainers that you followed more closely and that you looked up to?
There were a number that I followed closely. I mean, obviously, just because of the era in which I fell in love with racing, Dwayne Lucas was the one that you were seeing on television all the time, and just everything about his aura seemed so cool. However, I was playing my local circuit, so I never really got to follow him closely. And more than anything, I was always just impressed by the gentlemen that had smaller stables that were able to get it done and kind of be under the radar. As a handicapper, I was always looking for value. So I love the small outfits that knew how to win.
Yeah. Yeah. How would you describe your operation today and your philosophy to training horses?
You got to feed them right. You've got to treat them right. And you've got to enter them in the right spot. And if you just do those simple things, you're going to have success.
How do you know when it's the right spot?
I mean, that's the one part of the game that is actually the easiest for me, just from the simple standpoint. You know all the horses on your circuit. You know where you're supposed to be running them. You know, you're able to look at the form and know who's going to even be entering in the next spot. You follow it so close that you just know what you're going to be in against.
Well, and I know the best handicappers have told me that they'll spend a lot of time looking at the conditions of the race and figuring out which horses are the proper fit for those particular conditions. And those are the ones that they'll try to key on when they're making their wagers. And I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, your knowledge as a horse player has to help you tremendously in that respect when you're spotting your horses.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt of that. We even go so far as to claim for specific spots. Sometimes it'll backfire on us, and they'll win the race and blow the condition. But Louisiana has a lot of dated races, which we try to utilize that to the best of our ability.
Now, last year, Carl, and I started this program in the first half saying that the beauty of this show is that I get to visit with trainers that aren't the household names of a Bob Baffert or a Todd Pletcher or a Steve Asmussen, for example. But you look back on your year in 2014, and you led the nation in wins with 325 wins, and that means that you were ahead of Steve Asmussen and Bob Baffert and Todd Pletcher and Jerry Hollendorfer. And I can't even imagine what that had to be like for you, especially as somebody who got to the point where you are, the way you did it, and to only be training horses full-time for about 6 years. Take me back to last year and tell me about how magical that must have been.
I'm actually going to take it back a little further than that. When we first started, John Locke, I think his last year, he had finished 12th in the standings. And our goal that first year was to somehow to finish in the top 10, which I think we actually finished 10th or 9th. I can't recall, but we did make it into the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal every year was to continue to improve on that.
Okay.
Which we did. And then last year, once it looked like it was a possibility, it was very exciting to all of us because that was the goal that we'd been shooting for since day one. So when it actually looked like it was going to happen, it was exciting for a day or two. And then, unfortunately, you just get back into the routine of things, and that calendar changes, and it's time to do it again.
What's the key to keeping your operation running, I'll call it in peak condition, when you're winning that many races, and you're not just winning them at one racetrack, you're winning them all over the country, Carl. What's the key to keeping things rolling in the right direction when you're that hot and things are going that well?
It's all about communication. I mean, I'm blessed with great help, and we take care of our people, and we communicate, and everybody just has such great pride. I mean, we move horses around from spot to spot, and believe me, anytime they load one on a trailer, they don't want anybody to be anything other than ecstatic when they get the horse from one to another. So I mean, it's just, there's a lot of internal pride within the barn, and we keep the competitive juices flowing where everybody's just trying to outdo the next one.
How many horses do you have in training now?
Never enough.
Really?
That's the truth. I mean, you never have enough. I mean, I have more help than what I do horses, unfortunately, but right now we're at about currently 100 in training.
Wow. And still able to win 300.
Much higher than that.
Yeah, and still able to win 325 races. That's, Carl, that's impressive.
We wheel them back real fast sometimes.
But that's, you know what, though? That's okay, isn't it? That's kind of a more old-school approach, and sometimes...
When New York came up with that rule they did there at Aqueduct here a month or so ago, it was absolutely shocking to me.
Yeah.
I'm glad that's not our circuit, although it's fun to watch. But the horses that you're wheeling back quick are the horses that you can bend their guarantee or sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I've said that for a long time, that, you know, that's an old school approach to running horses. And if that horse is fit and he's kicking the barn down and he wants to run, you know, you got to let him go.
It's something that has to be done judiciously, but you can pretty much well assume that if we're wheeling one back, then we're probably very light in that spot.
Can you also overdo that too, though, Carl, where, you know, you run a horse back and you go, maybe I thought he was ready, but maybe I should have given him a few more days?
It happens. There's no doubt that it happens. You have to treat every horse like an individual. And you'll learn from it if you wheel one back too quick, and it's just obvious that he bounced on you, and you just learn from that mistake and don't make it again with him. You also have to be real careful about it when you do it in the summertime, just because it seems to take a lot more out of him.
talking with trainer Carl Broberg here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN. Carl, I know you do a lot with claiming horses, and that's a whole different skill when you're looking to claim a horse, move them up the ladder, whatever it might be. Talk about your approach to being successful with the claiming game.
Information. I mean, it's all about information, which it's funny how much this game has changed, and there's more and more information that's readily available, and you just have to make sure that you utilize all of it. I probably spend almost 2 hours a night watching race replays and taking my own notes. I mean, now you're in an age where everybody's looking at the buyers and rag numbers and a multitude of other things, so you just have to work harder and harder to get an edge, and the greatest edge right now is just watching the replays.
Wow, 2 hours a night. I always talk about this profession being a 24/7, 365-day-a-year type of job, and you have to be completely dedicated. It sounds like you're going above and beyond. How do you find time to balance your personal life and your family life as well?
Let's just say occasionally when I'm watching the replays, there will be kids in each lap watching them with me.
Do they want to get involved with horse racing?
I actually wish you hadn't asked that. unfortunately, I'm trying to do my best as a parent to steer them away from the sport. I have all girls, although they can all aspire to be the next Linda Rice, but I don't know. You always want better for your kids, and I don't want any of my children working 80-plus hours a week. So I'm trying to steer them away from the sport.
Do they like to hang out around the barn, though, and be with Dad?
They absolutely love it, especially I live near Dallas, so when we're at Lone Star Park, that's their favorite time of the year because they're able to go visit the barn daily.
Yeah, I can imagine that that must be difficult for you, because at some point, especially considering the fact that this is your life and your passion, they're going to take an interest in what Dad loves, and it's going to be hard to kind of back them off of that and steer them in a different direction, won't it?
Let's just say we focus on academics at the house.
How old are the girls?
6, 9. My oldest is 24, and then I've got two more through marriage that are ages 6 and 14. So
okay,
a lot of girls.
All right, wow, a lot of estrogen in that house. What's more difficult, training the horses or bringing the kids along?
I have a great spouse, so it's definitely the horses.
Carl Broberg here on Trainer Talk. Boy, just an amazing story. I mean, here's a gentleman that came to training horses when he was nearly 40. Didn't start at a very young age. He was around it, but never really got it rolling until just a few years back. And in 2014, the number one trainer in the nation by number of wins. And Carl, a huge, huge feather in your cap.
I appreciate it, and we're looking forward to see what we can get done in the future.
Yeah, what other goals do you still have in place?
To stay number one in wins. I never go to sleep dreaming of the Kentucky Derby or anything like that. When a big horse comes, chances are it's probably going to get sold and head elsewhere. So I never allow myself to dream of the big race. Last year when we won that $300,000 sprint at Evangeline, that was fun. But it truthfully is not much more gratifying than two races later when you're winning a 7,500 non-winner of three lifetime. My goal is just to continue to win as many races as possible and attempt to keep it profitable for the owners that are involved.
How do you maintain that communication with so many different, I'm sure you have several different owners involved with that many horses. How do you maintain that communication and make sure that everybody's staying happy and informed?
Well, by answering the phone religiously is number one. It's amazing how many times you get an owner, and one of the things that they're the least happy with when you get a new owner is that they just felt like they weren't informed or kept up on what was going on. So I answer the phone all the time and do a lot of texting and just work real hard to keep them as much a part of it as possible and let them know exactly where we're at so together we can make knowledgeable decisions.
You have a website, BrobergRacing.com. People can go and they can learn about you. They can see a gallery of some of your top horses and read about your philosophy on there. Have you found that engaging new owners and new clients through websites, through, let's say, social media, has helped you to build to where you are?
Oh, you actually just depressed me with that because I realize how long it's been since that's been updated. And I understand how essential it is. And you've now motivated me to get it improved. I believe that it is. I feel that I failed there, and I just haven't dedicated the time towards that aspect that I should. But I think it's imperative that we work hard to continue to get new people involved in the sport. And I've actually failed in that regard, but you've motivated me now.
Well, there you go. So when you're number one in wins again this year, I get a little credit for that because it's all going to be because of the website and the social media.
I'll give credit for credit to you.
Tell me, Carl, about a horse that you've been around in the past 6 or 7 years. You've had a chance to train, whatever it might be. And for whatever reason, that horse is special to you and you're just never going to forget that horse.
Oh, it's the first one that comes to my mind is a horse named T.I. Township. And he actually, what did I claim him for? I claimed him for $10,000. This was actually before I was training myself. And I was about to tap out as an owner. I just haven't had much success. And as much as I loved it, I realized that I couldn't keep funneling money at this stage in my life into something that wasn't going to work. And he just went on a tear for us. He was a turf sprinter. In fact, I guess we were kind of the ones that got him on the turf. I don't think he tried the turf but once or twice, and he just became a beast sprinting on the turf. He'd stalk and pounce, and he just kept moving up the ladder. And then when I took over for John, obviously, I was still taking care of him. And I just, golly, you absolutely fall in love with him. And he was good for us for a long time. And he got claimed off me a couple times, and I'd still always claim him back, even though I knew at that stage of his career, it made no sense. But I wanted to make sure that I was the last one with him so I could get him retired.
Wow. Wow, that's a great story. And that's what this sport is all about. You do become attached to so many of these horses. And even though it's a business, you try not to be. But that's the game is all about the horse. And I've had so many trainers tell me that you can't do what you're doing as a profession and not become attached to the horses. And it is all about the horses. And Carl, you're really on a roll. Want to wish you all the best moving forward here in 2015. And I know you want to repeat in number of wins, so good luck with that. And we'll look forward to seeing you in the winner's circle all over the country. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of one of our sponsors. It's Flair Equine Nasal Strips. I'll get those out to you. And again, really do appreciate all the time and all the best moving forward.
Well, thank you, and I enjoyed talking with you.
Good stuff. Carl Broberg here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasa Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Wow, what a show. Two great stories. Jenna Antonucci in the first half, Carl Broberg here in the second half. They came to the sport completely different ways. Carl having a ton of success, Jenna just getting things rolling. That's what this show is all about. That's what this game is all about. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You can get a podcast of this show. Listen at your leisure, and don't forget to join us every single Wednesday night for Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. My thanks to Jenna Antonucci and to Carl Broberg for being with me here tonight. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I am, of course, Mike Penna, and we will talk to you next Wednesday right here on Trainer Talk. Of course, tomorrow night, the call-in show. Don't miss it. It's presented by Brisnet.